I'm Chair Mike Sundin, Chairman of the Ag Finance Committee. This is Wednesday, March 10th. It's 1:46 p.m. I'm going to call a committee to order. Good afternoon. This meeting will be held in accordance with Rule 10.01. A roll call, Mr. Smith, please.
Chair Sundin.
Here.
Sundin, present. Vice Chair Vang.
Present.
Vang, present. Representative Anderson.
Anderson here.
Anderson, present. Representative Burkle.
Present.
Burkle, present. Representative Eklund.
Present.
Eklund, present. Representative Hansen R.
Hansen R, present.
Hansen R, present. Representative Hansen J.
Hansen J, present.
Hansen J, present. Representative Cleavorn.
Present.
Cleavorn, present. Representative Lippert.
Lippert, present.
Present. Lewick.
Representative Lewick, present.
Lewick, present. Representative Miller. Miller. Representative Nelson.
Nelson, present.
Nelson, present. Representative Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Thompson, present. We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. You have the minutes of the previous meeting in front of you. Representative Nelson, would you have a motion?
Yes, I'd move the minutes of the previous meeting.
Thank you. Are there any questions or corrections? Hearing none, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. Okay, this motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. We have a handful of bills on the agenda today. We're running a little bit behind with people's schedules. Hopefully we'll have time for good discussions on these bills. We will finish up department policy bill, get a quick update from the department on COVID vaccine news, and then move on to the rest. With that, Vice Chair, would you like to assume the chair?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have House Ballot 1898. And House Bill 1898 was heard on Monday, March 8th, and it was laid over. So I'll bring it back before the committee and move it that'd be recommended to be placed on the general register. Chair Sundin, please proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have one author's amendment, and I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Okay. Mr. Chair, moves the A1 amendment. Do you want to explain the amendment before we?
I will. Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment makes the changes the department discussed during their walkthrough of the bill on Monday. The amendment deletes the mental health data portion of the bill. That's Section 1 to prevent this bill from having to go to judiciary and civil law, and renumbers the sections and amends the title accordingly. So, this is a time-saving, labor-saving issue, and the privacy issues can be taken up next year. There's no sense of immediacy on that.
Okay. Any discussion on the amendment, A1 amendment? Okay. Seeing no questions, the A1 amendment is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the A1 amendment is adopted. There are no other amendments to consider, so we can open this to testify on Monday. Any closing comments, Chair Sundin, before you renew the motion?
No, thank you. It's just a pleasure to bring forth these bills and have cooperation from a very amiable committee. Much appreciated. So I'd renew my motion that House File 1898, as amended, be recommended to be placed in the General Register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Mr. Smith, please call the vote.
Chair Sundin?
Aye.
Sundin, aye. Vice Chair Vang?
Aye.
Vang, aye. Representative Anderson?
Anderson, aye.
Anderson, aye. Representative Burkle?
Burkle, aye.
Clerk will aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen R?
Hansen R, aye.
Hansen R, aye. Representative Hansen J?
J, aye.
Hansen J, aye. Representative Cleavorn?
Cleavorn, aye.
Cleavorn, aye. Representative Lippert?
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Representative Lewick?
Lewick, aye.
Lewick, aye. Representative Miller?
Miller, aye.
Miller, aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Thompson?
Thompson, aye.
Thompson, aye. 13 ayes, 0 nays.
On a vote of 13 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails and the bill as amended will head to the floor. Next up, we have, we want to spend a couple minutes getting a quick update from the Department of Ag on vaccine news for ag workers. We have reserved a few minutes for Deputy Commissioner Vauble. Would you like to comment and please state your name for the record and please proceed.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. My name is Andrea Vauble. I serve as Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And as part of my duties, I'm also helping out with the COVID-19 response. I was working on testing most of last year and then now helping out with the vaccine rollout for food and ag workers. So I am not a public health professional, but have been working on the operations and logistics of it. So I was just asked to do a quick update on where we're at with all things vaccine. And I'll run through it pretty quickly. I have some background on it that most of you may already know, but just to get us all on the same page. So I'm just gonna share my screen. You can just let me know if you see it.
Got it.
Awesome, okay. So as most of you know, it's been, you know, worldwide news. Last week, the FDA did grant emergency use authorization for the COVID-19 vaccine developed by Johnson & Johnson, otherwise called Janssen. It is a one-dose vaccine compared to the two for Pfizer and Moderna, and is 100% effective at preventing death in persons 18 and older. It has been a significant piece in the acceleration of the timeline on vaccine rollout, so we're very thankful. It certainly has been a game changer for all of us here in the state. So doses started arriving last Wednesday from Johnson & Johnson. You might have seen that we did set up a community vaccination program site at the Vikings Practice Facility in Eagan with over 13,000 doses. That was aimed for those in the 65 plus category and 1A healthcare workers. And then the remaining doses went out to vaccinators in the area who could help meet the timeliness goals of the 72-hour rule. We also have about four other community vaccination program state-run clinics that are set up, one in Duluth, one in Rochester, one in Minneapolis, and one in St. Paul. And we have been in the top 10 for almost 2 weeks, and we're currently at the number two spot for doses administered as a percentage of doses delivered to the state per the CDC. You might have seen that we do have some new tools on the vaccine dashboard the Department of Health houses. It was keeping up on the percentage of 65 plus with at least one dose. As you know, the governor was hoping to get to 70% before moving to the next phases, which we did reach. And then there's also an update on the race ethnicity data, and there's a tab specifically for that. So I do urge you to take a look at that when you have a chance. So we did release more detailed guidance for the next phases after the 65 plus group. That did include type 1 diabetes was included in the list of underlying medical conditions, people with rare conditions and disabilities, and then gave some guidance about providers considering the presence of multiple risk factors when they're sub-prioritizing. We also have a tool called the Vaccine Connector, which we're hoping all folks and all Minnesotans will take a look at if they can and sign up. Almost 650,000 Minnesotans have signed up for it already. It does ask several questions gets the information to you once you have become eligible and where you are able to access vaccine. So from the federal side of things, the Biden administration directed the federal retail pharmacy program partners that they have. Those are Walmart, Thrifty, White, and Hy-Vee to begin vaccinating teachers. As you know, we were already well underway on vaccinating teachers and childcare workers here in Minnesota. So for us to date, at least 55% of teachers and childcare workers have received at least one dose. The Biden administration also announced a commitment to provide sufficient supply to vaccinate every adult by the end of May by finalizing an agreement with Johnson & Johnson for 100 million doses by the end of June, which is great news. And then they are making it able so that vaccinators have a 4-week floor for allocations, allowing for planning. The allocation conversations are happening each week, and it's difficult to plan out how many doses we'll be getting in subsequent weeks. So this will help us in the long-term planning of our rollout. So as I mentioned, we are expected or have reached the 70% threshold of 65 plus with at least one dose. And so currently, as of right now, those who are eligible, they will remain eligible through. So if they have not received a vaccine yet, it doesn't mean that their eligibility status has gone away. They remain eligible. So long-term care residents and staff, people with disabilities in congregate settings, people age 65 plus, frontline healthcare workers, including primary caregivers, E12 educators, and childcare professionals. And then we also, so the tier two, which is was just opened up by the governor, and he announced this yesterday along with tier three. But tier two, it does include people with specific underlying health conditions, things like sickle cell disease, Down syndrome, chronic lung health or heart conditions, or those in active cancer treatment. It's also for people with rare conditions or disabilities that put them at a higher risk, and then food processing plant workers. The governor felt very strongly about that because they were, as we all know, disproportionately affected by outbreaks because of the nature of their work in food processing plants last year. And it's really necessary for them to be safe and protected and have a chance to have access to the vaccine. So tier three was opened up at the same time as tier two. The reason for that being we were finding that local public health, they are amazing individuals who are able to get out vaccine pretty quickly. Some of the areas of the state did not have as many of the phase two individuals as other locations. So we wanted to provide some flexibility so that once they did get through that tier two, they could go immediately to tier three without having to wait for that eligibility requirement to open up. So tier three does include people age 45 and older with one or more underlying medical condition, people age 16 and over with two or more underlying health conditions, and you'll see those are listed below, people age 50 plus in multi-generational housing, and then the big one for food and ag is the essential frontline workers. And so this does open up the rest of the food and ag industry. So we have the agricultural folks, airport staff, childcare workers, correctional settings, first responders. It does include all of food production, food retail, so all the grocery stores, as well as food service, manufacturing, and public transit, amongst others. So that's where we are right now. We have just worked on the allocation numbers for next week, and it's looking really good about a number of employers who have partnered with their local public health entities to make sure that they're ready and can vaccinate their employees on site. And then also opening up eligibility for those retail pharmacies has been helpful because now those who are in those eligible categories can now go to a retail facility that does have supply. We are still finding that the demand still exceeds supply, but we're getting closer and closer, and things are moving much more rapidly than we anticipated. So I went through that really quickly, but I just happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Vauble. We do have very limited time, but I do see one hand is up. So Representative Anderson, I'll accept that one question and then we'll move forward to our next item on the agenda. Representative Anderson.
Thank you. I kind of messed up my...
Representative Anderson, you're muted.
I should know better. Thank you. Sorry about that. Commissioner Vauble, thank you for the update. Zeroing in on food processing workers, I assume you're talking about folks working at some of the major processing plants. What have you got set up in terms of how we're going to get to those folks quickly? And also then, does this also include the mom and pop shops in our small towns? Will those folks also be eligible now then to get the shots along with those that work at the major plants?
Yes, thank you, Representative Anderson and Madam Chair, thank you for the question. So yes, the mom and pop shops who are in food processing would also be eligible. We're really trying to get to the folks that have to work indoors, cannot work from home, and are needed to, you know, keep the food supply chain going. So we have pulled a list based upon our licensing data and have worked with Department of Health and local public health entities to do some matchmaking if necessary. We found that a lot of the food processors did already have some pre-existing relationships, some with the retail pharmacy folks like Hy-Vee, and then others who did have close relationships with their local public health directors and agencies who were ready and happy to schedule site visits and get folks vaccinated as soon as possible. So we anticipate a large number of food processing workers to be vaccinated next week.
Okay, thank you, Deputy Commissioner. You know, members, we did not reserve a lot of time for questions, and so I will ask the members if you do have questions to follow up directly with Deputy Commissioner Vauble. We do have a busy schedule today, so I want to apologize and thank you, Commissioner Vauble, for your time and for the updates. I feel like we're finally reaching, but feeling like there's light at the end of the tunnel, so I will keep an eye on this. And with that, I'll return the gavel to Chair Sundin.
Thank you, Vice Chair Vang. Just a personal comment here in regards to Commissioner Vauble. About a week or so ago, I cut you short in committee. I think that was rude of me, and I just wanted to say that your input in this committee is always welcome and valued. That said, House File 1687, Vang. It's an agriculture cooperative grant program provided and rulemaking authorized. We've got 20 minutes allocated for this. Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm here today to present 1687. So this bill will reauthorize NDA to make grants to help producers develop cooperatives to process and market Minnesota-grown agriculture products. This language mirrors a program that used to be in the statute at NDA. It's timely now, and it's important that we bring this program back for two reasons. First, because Minnesota farmers are growing new, often high-value crops, for which the market and the supply chain is still emerging. Producer-led cooperatives can help these producers develop the processing and marketing infrastructure needed to grow the market for these crops. I work with many producers who are growing hemp, for example. A key challenge for them is finding processing. If these farmers had support to form cooperatives, they could come together and build some of that processing capacity for themselves. This value-added work can also help producers earn more money for their products. Second, cooperative development is timely because many producers are becoming frustrated. Consolidation in our food system and want to build alternative models. This is particularly true in the wake of COVID-19. Cooperatives are an important tool that producers can use to build alternative markets for their farm products. There is also a lack of local meat processing, for example, that has been raised in this committee. I know there are local producers who are thinking about ways they could start cooperatively own slaughter facilities. And finally, you'll notice this bill does not have a dollar amount attached to it. That's because the Agri program already supports such important work. It's not my intention to take away from that. Instead, this leads the funding up to the commissioner in case money becomes available. My hope is that if the federal money becomes available for economic recovery, we could direct some of it through the program. And finally, the cooperative development is a tool we can use to help Minnesota producers innovate and build new models that could better serve their farm businesses and communities. And Mr. Chair, I also have a DE1 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Vang. Did you actually move your the 1687?
No, I would like to move the 1687 DE1 amendment.
Yeah, we have the 1687 before us. That has been moved, and now we'll go to the DE1. So you're going to move the DE1 then?
Yes, I move to. Place it before the committee. The DE1 amendment is basically, it just references a different part of the law because we saw there was a fiscal note attached that with a small cost of $46,000 for small rulemaking. And so we decided to reference this reference this to a different section of law to avoid the need to undergo rulemaking and incur the associated expenses.
Okay, the committee has the DE1 amendment before us and explained. All those in favor of the DE1, say aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay. Okay, the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. There are no other amendments submitted. Vice Chair Vang, let's hear from your presenters. They each have 2 minutes. Mr. Smith will kindly throw the hook to him after 2 minutes. Mr. Ben Penner, Perennial Promise Growers Cooperative.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Sundin, and Vice Chair Vang, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ben Penner from Ben Penner Farms, and I am the Vice President of the Perennial Promise Growers Cooperative, and I live in St. Peter. I'm honored to be here today to testify in support of Representative Vang's bill to reauthorize cooperative development grants at the MBA, and these grants would help us to launch our new cooperative. The Perennial Promise Growers Cooperative, or Perennial Promise, is farmer-led and will provide direction and assistance to farmers interested in growing and marketing Kernza. Perennial Promise will help commercialize ecosystem services from perennial and other continuous living cover crops, such as Kernza, winter camelina, pennycress, and similar forever green initiative crops by expanding the number of acres dedicated to these crops. Working closely with growers, Perennial Promise will provide assistance in planting, growing, harvesting, marketing, and by providing logistical and processing network services and expertise for scaling up Kernza and related crops. The cooperative will work closely with the University of Minnesota as well as other private and public entities to develop markets, networks, and relationships to develop new varieties of Kernza and expand the commercial viability of Kernza and other perennial crops throughout their scale-up process and commercialization process. We plan to assist in the development of other agronomic aspects of perennial agriculture, such as ecosystem and climate positive aspects of this suite of crops. Some quick key characteristics: it's farmer-led, currently led by a steering committee of 6 Kernza growers in Minnesota, 1 in Wisconsin, closely aligned with the University of Minnesota and Research Agronomists and the Forever Green Initiative. We seek to become a hub of networking, price discovery, product development, and agronomic and technical assistance with a focus on ecosystem services. And we want to bring value back to the grower, back to the communities where the crop is grown, and to the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Mia Ulisse. Please identify yourself and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. I'm pleased to be able to testify on this bill today. My name is Mia Ulisse, and I am testifying on behalf of 40 Acre Cooperative. We are a grower cooperative that is located in Samstown, Minnesota, that reaches beyond and to the state of Minnesota. And we focus on Black farmers and finding ways to increase market reach and opportunity for Black farmers to take advantage of hemp production and other specialty crops. As you might have heard from other testifiers and past bills, Minnesota is really leading the way in hemp research. And I think that there's a great opportunity that we have in the state of Minnesota to be able to build up and establish relationships across the country around hemp production for fiber, for grain, and for CBD and other purposes. So I think that it's really telling for us to be able to provide opportunities for the Department of Agriculture to send out grants to farming cooperatives that are trying to lift off their businesses. As you might know, Minnesota has the highest rate of cooperatives, whether it's consumer or farmer cooperatives per capita in the country. And so it's really indicative of the culture of agriculture that we have here in the state of Minnesota, of finding opportunities for us to connect our farmers to opportunities for distribution, opportunities for processing, and marketing opportunities. We are a relatively new cooperative, and so a lot of the challenges that we are facing are around making sure that we can secure funding for processing. It's not necessarily the same as processing carrots or processing cucumbers. Hemp production and processing has to be in a very specific facility. There are obviously legal requirements and policies that we have to abide by to make sure that we are not sending out or selling content that has a high level of THC. And this can be a significant barrier for farmers that are trying to take advantage of accessing this new and budding industry. And by having opportunities like this from the Department of Agriculture in the future, it would allow us to be able to our membership base and provide opportunities for them to be able to process their product. And we are working on a mobile hemp processing facility as we speak right now, and are forming relationships across the country so that when our farmers are getting to the point of harvesting, they can actually send their hemp in for processing and be able to take advantage financially of the opportunities that the hemp industry is producing for our farmers. So thank you for your time. I'm really excited with this opportunity, especially because it doesn't have a financial appropriation. And I think it's an opportunity for us all to show our support for cooperatives in the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Okay, next up we have Stuart Laurie with the Minnesota Farmers Union. Please identify yourself and utilize your time allotted.
Thank you, Chair Sundin and members of the committee. I will, for the record, my name is Stu Laurie. I'm the Government Relations Director for Minnesota Farmers Union, and I'll work to be very brief so I don't get the hook from Kyle here. Just want to share our support for this legislation, you know, and talking to members. I think they're excited about initiatives like this, you know, particularly in the wake of COVID-19, when our food system was stressed. Producers are excited about building new models that can serve them better, serve their communities better, and cooperatives are one way to do that. So thank you for the time, and happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Well, thank you. Now I have time to tell a story about when once I introduced your grandmother at an event and told everyone that we allotted the next 45 minutes for a five-minute speech from Becky Laurie. So, so thank you very much. Okay, no one else has signed up to testify. Are there any questions for the witnesses or the author at this time? Going once, going twice. Okay.
Chair Sundin, Representative yes. Anderson has a question.
Okay, I don't see hands here on my screen. Representative Anderson, please.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Sorry about that. Had a question for the lady testifying from the 40-acre cooperative. She had a very good testimony. Just a quick question for her.
Yeah. Ma'am, you mentioned... You'll see. Are you available yet? Yeah, okay. Go ahead. Representative Anderson.
Thanks for your testimony. It was very interesting. Now, just to clear up, your co-op has already been formed, correct? Or are you looking to use this bill to form another co-op, or... What is the situation?
Ms. Ulysses?
Good question. Yes, Representative Anderson, our cooperative has already been established. We were established in 2019. So we are definitely still in the early development stages of our cooperative.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Please, Representative Anderson.
Not trying to get down to dollars and pennies, but any idea what your startup costs were, legal fees, things like that? I notice in the bill here there's a cap of $50,000. That I would assume these are smaller co-ops, and that figure seems kind of high. So just wondering if you have any idea what the costs for your co-op were to organize. And if you don't want to share secrets, I totally get that. But just trying to get a handle on what some of the costs are.
In absolute honesty, I have been with 40 Acre as an organizational development consultant for the last year. And so I am not fully aware of the costs for their startup in the very beginning stages. But I will say that that is a small drop in the bucket of what is required to establish a cooperative. You have legal fees, and you have the time that it takes for people to come together. A lot of cooperatives don't get into the fully operational stage for about 8 to 10 years. And so I think that having a grant would have a significant impact, because a lot of cooperatives string themselves along for a long time because they don't have the opportunity to take advantage of a grant like this. And so I think that this would allow for a quicker startup phase for new cooperatives to be able to access those funds. Even processing equipment is extremely expensive one processing facility that's not mobile could be into the millions just for the development. And so, yeah, this is like drops in the buckets, but would really make a huge difference for cooperatives that are in those very beginning baby stages to be able to lift off and start walking.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. No other questions. There was a fiscal note completed on the bill as introduced with delete all amendment. We'll need to see if a revised note will be needed before the omnibus bill is put together. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Vang, do you care to renew your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank the committee members for the time to hear this bill. And therefore, I renew my motion that House File 1687 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill.
Thank you, Vice Chair Vang. House File 1687 is laid over. Next up is Representative Thompson. House File 1543 regarding hand sanitizer licensing. House File 1543, the commercial pesticide applicator licensing exemption provided for sanitizer and disinfectant use. Representative Thompson, I understand this bill that it's time sensitive, so it needs to travel separately. Representative Thompson, your first bill for the committee, please move your bill and begin.
Thank you so much, Chair. I move that House File 1543 be recommended to be placed on the general register. Also have an author's amendment to get the bill in shape that I like to present it. So I also move that A1 amendment. A1 amendment.
Okay, the A1 amendment has been moved. Do you have a explanation or would you like to defer to the department?
No, the A1, it has the, as of now, just putting the dates, just changing the date.
Okay. Thank you. No other amendments were submitted. We can vote on the A1 amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. No further amendments were submitted. Representative Thompson, let's continue with your presentation and hear from your witnesses. I understand we have presenting today Whitney Place, Assistant Commissioner. Whitney Place, would you introduce yourself to the committee and proceed with your testimony?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thanks so much to Representative Thompson for carrying this bill. In the COVID package, we exempted license category for antimicrobial products specifically for those who were applying these products as it related to COVID-19. We had an end date in that exemption of April 1st, 2021, which we're coming up to. I don't think any of us anticipated how long this pandemic would be lasting. And so what we're asking for is the continuation of that exemption specifically for these applicators who are applying these products in public buildings, schools, airplanes, things like that, as it pertains to COVID-19. So thanks so much again to Representative Thompson, and we thank you all for your support.
Are there any other testifiers? Hearing none, seeing none. Any questions for the witness or Whitney Place from the committee? Okay, hearing none, seeing none.
Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen has a question.
I don't know why I'm not seeing this stuff. Representative Hansen, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Thompson, for bringing the bill forward. I don't know if you know, I used to actually run this provision or these programs at the Department of Agriculture a very long time ago. I see Ms. Place is smiling. It was a long time ago. But this is important stuff. So I think extending this, I know for the airport, for Delta and the airplanes of providing for this, it's important for the workers out there and to make sure that they can keep getting things safe for people using the planes and for themselves. So thank you for bringing this forward, and I'm going to co-author your bill.
Okay, any other comments for the author? Okay, seeing no further discussion, Representative Thompson, do you care to renew your motion?
Yes, Chair, thank you. So there's nothing else I have, Chair.
Okay, Representative Thompson renews his motion that 1543 as amended be recommended to be placed on the general register. The motion is before us. Mr. Smith, please call the vote.
Chair Sundin?
Aye.
Sundin, aye. Vice Chair Vang?
Aye.
Vang, aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Anderson, aye. Representative Burkle?
Aye.
Burkle, aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen R.
Hansen R, aye.
Hansen R, aye. Representative Hansen J.
Hansen J, aye.
Hansen J, aye. Representative Cleavorn?
Aye.
Cleavorn, aye. Representative Lippert?
Lippert, aye.
Representative Lippert, aye. Representative Lewick?
Lewick, aye.
Lewick, aye. Representative Miller?
Miller, aye.
Miller, aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Thompson?
Thompson, aye.
Thompson, aye. 13 ayes, 0 nays.
On a vote of 13-0, the motion prevails and the bill as amended will head to the floor. Thank you very much, Representative Thompson. Next up is Representative Petersburg with House File 1830 regarding feast. We have 15 minutes blocked for this. Representative Anderson, you'd like to do the honors of moving the bill for the author.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would like to move House File 1830 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. House File 1830 has been moved. It deals with local food promotion and education event funding provided and money appropriated. The bill is before us. Welcome to the committee, Representative Petersburg. Please begin your presentation, and let's hear from your witnesses.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill, and thank you, committee, for hearing it as well, and to Representative Anderson for moving the bill. This bill, for those of you that have been on committee in the past, you've heard this bill before. It's a grant program that we do every 2 years for the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation to kind of be the fiscal agent for a really good program that provides opportunities for farmers and marketers of products to meet with customers and consumers. And it's kind of a food to market type program that is done in Rochester each year. 1 year it's educational, 1 year it's more a direct connection. And just to give you a small story about how effective it is, one of the first years that it was held, a local lady who owns a candy shop, and she learned making candy by her grandmother, decided to go into business. She joined it, made some great connections, and within a few years, she was actually allowed to be one of the candy vendors up at the Super Bowl that was held up here in Minneapolis. And so she's really growing the business and kind of specializes in sugar-free candy as well. So it's a great program to do this. So it is currently in the department's budget as well as the governor's budget, but it's not part of the base because it's a just two-year grant program. And so we need to kind of always review it to see if it's still effective. And right now I believe it is. So I have two testifiers here, Tim Penny, who runs the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation, a former congressman from Southern Minnesota, does a great job in what he does. He wasn't able to be here, but we have two testifiers, and I think, Ms. Conley, if you want to put up the slide, they will talk to it. So we have Pam Bishop and Jan, I'm not going to sure I'm going to say this way, Joannitis. So I will turn it over to them.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Good afternoon, Chair Sundin and committee members. My name is Pam Bishop. I'm the Vice President of Economic Development at the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation. And we are really pleased to be with you today because, as Representative Petersburg discussed and shared with you, FEAST has been a longstanding convening event and a festival that we've been proud to be a part of. We've been partners with the Minnesota Department of Ag and Renewing the Countryside for the last 7 years since the conference event has taken place in Rochester. And Feast really does engage the local food producers from across rural Minnesota, and not just solely our southern region. In fact, things we are proud of in terms of what it's been able to produce, and that story was great. That, in fact, was Curly Girls, a chocolate candies, who's now in Owatonna. It really does increase the awareness of local foods. We know that local foods continues to be a driver in many of our small towns in terms of producing strong economies. And this is one way that we can help advance those early stage producers and makers who are really vying for market opportunities and build connections with food institutions across the state and across the country, really. You might think of this as the farmer's market on steroids. If you've ever been to the festival, you'll notice that we have over close to 100 vendors each year and over 1,500 consumers that walk into the show and taste and sample and purchase the products from the vendors. It's so important to get to know the people who are making our food, and this gives them the time to walk the aisle, introduce themselves, folks get familiar with where their food is coming from, who is making it. And it also introduces them to buyers, individuals who are looking for ways to enhance their food products on their shelves. And it also gets them acquainted with other institutions who are looking for food suppliers. The trade show is another key component to this event. It provides an educational opportunity for business owners to get better situated to have those conversations. And in most cases, the vendors are telling us they're looking for future sales. They want to build out their market opportunities, and this gives them introductory opportunity to do so. They're looking to build their brand. They're looking at networking. Networking continues to be a big part of this event. They're gathering ways to build their business skills, and these trade shows help with that. And this also helps them do market research. They can see who else is out there with similar products. And in some cases, we've helped folks build collaborative opportunities. We'll also say the scale of who's showing up in terms of our exhibitors is changing. We have several exhibitors who represent strong minority populations, including people of color, and several of them are co-owned by women entrepreneurs. We have over 300 unique vendors that have represented various components of the food production supply chain since we started this festival. And we're just so hopeful that you'll continue to support this as you have in the past years. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
And the next testifier is...
This is Jan joining us from Renewing the Countryside. And thank you so much, Chair and committee members, for having this opportunity. Pam and I work very, very close together, along with a number of others, to work on not just the event, the festival and the trade show, but we really see this as part of a region-wide effort to build local food economy in Greater Minnesota. The event really started off of research that was done that identified among producers, both food makers and smaller scale farmers, where they were having lack of access to markets, especially in more rural areas. Often the demand for their products were from the Twin Cities area, which was great, but they also would have loved to have sold that bacon or jams into their local communities, into their local grocery stores, into the local restaurants. So this effort has really had multi-pronged approaches, with the kind of key pieces of it being this public event, which really not only includes the one-day festival that this year we held a little more in COVID time, so it was a drive-through festival with online opportunities for people to engage, but it also includes a lot of media and outreach that's done across the region telling stories of these different food makers and farmers and how they're bringing food into their food system. The last 3 years, and I will hold this up here, we've also produced this Feast Local Foods magazine, which showcases stories of the farmers and food makers. Commissioner Bailey is our front story. Patrice Bailey is our front story in this last year's volume. The trade show piece, which Pam talks some about, is partly education, so providing training to food entrepreneurs, whether it's food safety training, whether it's information on marketing. We always do surveys and gather information from them in order to get ideas of what would be most useful, and then we bring in different speakers. We also provide time for them to network with each other, to talk to wholesale and retail buyers. So it's really a way for them to learn. We also then have normally, not this year, but we normally have the trade show open for just buyers, so just wholesale buyers, where we have everyone from small and mid-sized restaurants to the Minneapolis Public School Food System Services come down multiple years, to food co-ops, to grocery stores, to hospitals who come and get to go through that that same hall where they get to taste the different products and talk to the different food makers. The follow-up surveys we've received from buyers always say that they're planning on picking up two or three products. And let's see, as of in 2019, 60% of them said they would be picking up 4 to 6 products for their shelves. And then 6% said they would do 10 to 15 products. So many of the makers who have been involved in this have pointed to this show as a way to get into their local Hy-Vee and to get into other systems that they hadn't had an opportunity to. If you're not familiar with this space, there are huge food shows, but they're on the coasts. They're in California and New York. And the Minnesota Department of Ag does provide assistance to help food makers go to those shows. But those shows really are for businesses that are one step up from a lot of the businesses that we have. Some of the businesses that have been at Feast have gone on to go on that next level. But those national shows really are looking for, kind of nationwide distribution, which requires a scaling up of businesses. So we see this as a really important piece of the food systems puzzle in Minnesota by providing opportunities for smaller scale food makers and farmers to build their businesses.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for the witnesses or the author? Okay. Hearing none, seeing none, no further discussion is necessary. Representative Petersburg, before you offer closing comments, you are one of the more senior legislators in this meeting today. And, I think it would be appropriate for you to carry on with some of the traditions that we've seen in the agriculture committee, where candy samples or vegetable samples or candy samples are distributed, or candy samples. So I don't know, you could always check with the committee administrator on room numbers and delivery possibilities. So just throwing that out there for you. So any closing comments, Representative Petersburg?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, I'm in my office, so, as soon as I see people start coming back to the offices, I'll try to make sure I have some of that available, because we have a couple of different good candy stores that make homemade candies in Owatonna as well. But in closing, Mr. Chair, in all seriousness, this program and this grant program has been very effective over the years. And I know that Mr. Penny is in constant contact with Peter Jessup from the department as well. And it's a program that has really proven that its effectiveness, and is worthy, I think, also of duplication in other parts of the state as well. But I just ask your support for continuing the grant for $25,000 a year. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Representative Anderson, would you like to renew the motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 1830 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Petersburg and Representative Anderson, for the motion. Hearing that, House File 1830 is laid over. Next up is House File 2037. Vice Chair Vang, can you take a gavel again?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Feel free to move your bill whenever you're ready.
Okay. I'd move 2037 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill.
Okay. The bill is before us. Please begin your presentation, and let's hear from your witnesses afterwards.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. We have Shannon Schlett from ARI, the Executive Director, to speak on the bill.
Ms. Shannon Schlett, please feel free to proceed. Say your name, proceed with your testimony.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Shannon Schlett, the Executive Director of the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute. And I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to talk about this bill and its importance to the industry. I think, as we all know, livestock is a major contributor to our agricultural economy and to the industry. ARI, we've typically had to meet scientists on staff to assist Minnesota businesses and to assist industry in trying to move initiatives forward and to do product development and assist them. But we have been without a full-time meat scientist since 2017. From that time period, we have used our food scientists that we have on staff to fill gaps and to work with clients to help them navigate through some of the challenges that they face. But it really doesn't provide that same level of service as we've seen in the past in terms of what we can do with that base knowledge of a meat scientist. And in our Marshall facility, we do have assets in place already. We have a meat product lab where we can do fabrication and cutting. We have a smokehouse. We have the refrigerated space there as well. So we are well set up. And what we're just lacking is someone on staff full time to really try to move this forward. So as we looked at what's been going on in the industry, we did contract with a third party to do an industry assessment in 2020. Where they reached out to 15 industry stakeholders from processors to industry reps to our commodity associations just to better understand their needs and make sure that we are doing something that would really service the industry. And that was a resounding yes that they had missed ARI's capabilities in this space, especially in the areas of product and marketing assistance, in terms of product formulation, in terms of being able to do the short courses or those demonstration sites for fabrication and cutting. And what we're really seeing is a lot of need and scale-up assistance, as well as in just questions around facilities and investments and things that having someone with that expertise on staff could really help navigate some of those challenges that our small meat processes are facing as they look at growing their businesses, as they see increased demand with the local food movement, as we had just heard from movement as well. Also, we provide input on HACCP plans or hazard analysis, critical control points, and just help them navigate through that process and all the inspection needs. And then the other thing that we heard a lot was just having an organization for providing a site where equipment manufacturers or equipment needs could be tested, looked at, come in and have a place where those types of demonstrations can occur for looking at some of those new investments that groups might want to make. And then finally, we've collaborated in the past with many partners in this space, and we would continue to do that in terms of workforce development, training courses, certification programs, elements like that, that we know continue to be in need out there for this industry. In addition, we had done a 2013 study that also showed, I think, reinforced a lot of the findings that we found here in 2020 as well that have carried through. So it's great to get a couple of touch points in terms of what the need for the industry is. And I'll just add that even without a meat scientist, we continue to service that industry. As I said, we've seen anywhere from 25 to 35 projects come through in the last 3 years. But I think what we're missing are those larger industry initiatives where we just don't have the background base to really try to move those opportunities forward and really move the dial, I think, for the industry in terms of what we'd like to do in terms of creating new opportunities for value-added agriculture in Minnesota. So with that, again, these funds would provide funding for a full-time hire and advancing programs and initiatives in the meat science space. And with that, I'll just say we greatly appreciate the partnership with Minnesota Legislature over the last 30 years to try to advance value-added opportunities for the industry, for our producers, our entrepreneurs, and our small businesses across the spectrum. And I appreciate your consideration of this request.
Thank you, Mr. Slush. I apologize earlier too, and for butchering your name as well. any questions to the witnesses or author? Okay, seeing none, I don't see any amendments submitted. So seeing no further discussion, Chair Sundin, do you have any closing comments before you renew your motion?
I do. You know, we do a lot of good things in this committee for promoting agriculture, and who'd ever thought we'd be talking about growing or fish, you know, fish farms and some of the different topics that we take up. But this is a real meat and potatoes issue. So I renew my motion that 2037 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill.
Thank you, Chair Sundin. With that, House File 2037 is laid over. I'll bring the gavel back to Mr. Chair for any announcements.
We're adjourned.